SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello and welcome to a Tuesday Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid and all across the Sports Grid network. That includes sportsgrid.com/watch, where you can find your favorite destination and consume everything all across the grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. We are here together for the next 3 hours up until 11 a.m. Eastern time on this Tuesday. It is cut day around the National Football League, the final conclusion of training camp in the NFL. All 32 clubs need to make their difficult decisions to trim the roster down to 53 active players by a deadline of 4 p.m. Eastern time. We'll go all around the big acquisitions, transactions, and maneuvers in the National Football League over these 3 hours. We are just 48 hours away from the start of week one of the 2024 college football season. 21 games in store on Thursday, 6 games on Friday. In the Netflix documentary Sign Stealer about Connor Stallions is out, a celebration of college football and that cheating scandal on this Tuesday. All around Major League Baseball, the U.S. Open in tennis is now underway. All of that and plenty more DRS over these next 3 hours.
Yep, cut down. What do you say? Roughly 1,000 players will be released from the NFL, also known as the Super Bowl for Enterprise Rent-A-Car, because they load up their fleet and their staff for this offseason, and they're ready to get going here. So it's, well, I'm ready for today. The energy is popping, and it's time to get after it, man. Shout out Enterprise Rent-A-Car, man. Big day, big day.
I don't think I've ever heard cut day around the National Football League categorized as the Super Bowl for Enterprise. You might be on to something there. Yeah. Somebody who will not be working at Enterprise in 2024 or beyond, that's CeeDee Lamb. Finally, the Dallas Cowboys and CD ink a long-term contract extension, the second largest contract extension we have seen in the history of the National Football League for a non-quarterback. CeeDee Lamb signing a four-year, $136 million deal yesterday with Dallas. That pays CeeDee out at $34 million per year, a mil per year behind Justin Jefferson for the second highest paid wide receiver and non-quarterback in the history of the National Football League. A $38 million signing bonus for CeeDee Lamb. That's the most ever guaranteed on a signing bonus for a wide receiver. So, ha-ha, Justin Jefferson, says CeeDee Lamb. But finally, DRS, finally, the Cowboys do something positive, and they keep CeeDee Lamb in-house for many years to come.
What took so long, Dallas Cowboys? One of the best players in the league. He's young. He's in his prime. Pay the man and move forward and have a decent season. Now you can see those 9, 10, 11 win seasons for the Dallas Cowboys once again back in play, because CeeDee Lamb should be back and ready to go. Now he's going to have a little bit of time on that acclimation process from being out of camp so long, but he's a professional athlete. Yeah. What, 130-plus catches last year? He was sensational. I expect the same thing to happen this year. Well-deserved CeeDee Lamb. That's one of those contracts. Man, we don't look at that. Ooh, they overpaid that guy. Yeah. No, they didn't. He got exactly what he deserved.
Exactly what he deserved, to corner the market, to be around that number that Justin Jefferson received a few months ago. Justin Jefferson, highest paid wide receiver, non-quarterback, $35 million per year. CeeDee Lamb just behind, $34 million per year. CeeDee Lamb did lead the National Football League with 135 receptions a season ago, had 1,749 receiving yards, second most, only 50 yards behind Tyreek Hill in 12 receiving touchdowns. CeeDee Lamb has had more than 1,100 yards each of his last three seasons, all 3 years, a Pro Bowler, if not the best wide receiver in the National Football League, top three, top five, to say the least. More maneuvers yesterday around the NFL. The Green Bay Packers have solidified their backup quarterback position. Not Sean Clifford, not Michael Pratt, the rookie out of Tulane. A trade the Packers made with the Titans to acquire acquire Malik Willis. In return, going back to Nashville, a seventh-round draft pick in 2025. Willis, who was selected in the third round of 2022, at that time had some steam, maybe to be the first quarterback off the board of the 2022 NFL draft, did not pan out in Tennessee. Now he gets a reserve role in Green Bay.
I think it's a great landing spot for Malik Willis. Am I thinking he could be a starting quarterback in the NFL? Maybe so, but the jury's going to be out. But now there's no pressure to be the backup quarterback. And also, from a Packers perspective, if you can rehabilitate his career, and if Jordan Love does go down, and hopefully it's not a devastating injury, maybe a week or two due to a minor injury and he plays well, that's a trade piece you can flip. You spend the seventh rounder on him. In 3 years, you trade him for a fourth rounder. That's how you invest in the quarterback position. Don't mind this move from either side. Willis wasn't going to be the starting quarterback in Tennessee. He's not going to be the starting quarterback in Green Bay, but he can be a serviceable backup option that you can use as a trade piece, possibly down the line.
Malik Willis was probably slotted into being QB number three for the Titans behind the starter Will Levis and the veteran Mason Rudolph. So a good deal for Green Bay to provide some upside behind Jordan Love. Now we go to Major League Baseball, an 11-game slate, technically 12 yesterday around the bigs. And in one of the marquee matchups in the midweek, we go to Philadelphia at the bank between the Phils and the Astros. We go to extra innings in Bryce Harper, an RBI single in the home half of the 10th, walks it off for the Fightins. They knock off the Astros in game number one, 3-2 in 10 innings.
Yeah, I'm unfamiliar with teams that come to town and have worse runners with scoring position numbers than the Philadelphia Phillies. But yesterday, a 1-for-10 for the Astros. And how about this? You enter into extra innings and Hader's going 2 innings. That's usually an automatic win for the Houston Astros. But Bryce Harper comes up big with that single. Great at bat for Trey Turner in the bottom of the 10th inning, for getting on base to get that first and second nobody out. So those high leverage performances here. Nice. By the way, Harper, 2 of 3 last night and got on base 4 total times with 2 more walks.
Yeah.
Only 3 runs scored by the Phillies, which is like pulling my hair out watching them play, it feels at times. That's 3 wins in a row for the Fightins. Hallelujah.
A total staying under 8. Zach Wheeler on the bump for the Phils was solid and quality once again. In 5 starts in August, he has not allowed more than 2 earned runs. That's what he gave up yesterday over 6 innings of work against the Astros. It was Bryce Harper scoring that tying run in the home half of the 6th, an RBI off the bat of Nick Castellanos. An important doubleheader yesterday in Cleveland between the Guardians and the Royals, that AL Central rivalry, and the Royals take both. They win game 1, 4-3. They were favored in the opener. They were an underdog in game 2. Logan Allen gets lit up by KC and the veteran Salvador Perez. 6 RBIs yesterday, including a grand slam in that second game of the doubleheader. Cleveland now just a 1-game lead in the American League Central over Kansas City.
Said yesterday, I thought the slight pitching advantage in both of those games did go to the Kansas City Royals, and it played out that way. Now we have an absolute barn burner out there between 3 teams at the top, which does include the Minnesota Twins. That's going to be an awesome finish in the Central.
Yeah. And for me, Kansas City with 2 wins has 74 this year over their preseason win total of 73.5, a bet I made way back in December with the guidance of Craig Mish. Danny Jansen making Major League Baseball history yesterday for the Red Sox against his former team in the Blue Jays, was traded from Toronto to Boston at the trade deadline. And in a game that was made up from late in June, early yesterday at Fenway, Danny Jansen was catching for the Red Sox against his former team, becoming the first player in MLB history to play for both teams in the same game.
Yeah, I don't know what's more annoying. This story yesterday, people tried to pump out, or Bobby Bonilla gets paid every July, whatever it is. I mean, hey, Danny Jansen. Like, I expected Danny Jansen to be in a different uniform actually playing baseball for the other team, not because he was a quote-unquote pinch hitter and he was catching that same at-bat. What a terrible story out here and a waste of time. How about that?
This guy hates fun. Triple header around the WNBA. Caitlin Clark leads the Fever to a victory over Atlanta in the ATL. Kelsey Mitchell, a game-high 29 points. The New York Liberty continue to roll. They win by 14, 26-5. The best record in the W. The Mystics win outright over the Storm as a double-digit underdog. And you can expect the U.S. Open update each and every day to end out 7-7. Novak Djokovic and Coco Gauff sweep yesterday in their opening matches in their title defenses. More on the Early Line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It took far too long, but a done deal is a done deal. Dallas and CeeDee Lamb agreeing to a four-year, $136 million contract extension. That is $34 million annually. It is the second most we have ever seen for a non-quarterback or wide receiver in the history of the National Football League. Only a tick behind Justin Jefferson. Again, it took way, way, way too long, but ultimately, before the regular season starts at the Star, the Cowboys and CeeDee Lamb have agreed to a new deal that should make both sides very happy. CeeDee Lamb gets his money. The Dallas Cowboys get their best offensive piece entering 2024.
Did anybody actually think that the Dallas Cowboys were headed into the 2024 season without CeeDee Lamb for like the first couple games because they couldn't come to an agreement? This was one of those instances where outside a quarterback, you just couldn't afford to have this guy miss any time because how integral he is to that offense. And I'm being honest, like they'll tell you on a week-to-week basis, oh, wide receiver being out doesn't mean all that much to the point spread. But I'm here to tell you right now, let's just say CeeDee Lamb got traded for a first-round pick and a second-round pick in next year's draft, which meant, Ben, you couldn't use that money and or that player this late in the season. I don't think the Dallas Cowboys make the playoffs. Quite frankly, I'm not so sure they're even a 500 football team without CeeDee Lamb. Yeah. With CeeDee Lamb, they're a 10-win football team and a legitimate threat to win the NFC East. That's how important he was. So very few times you take a look at a wide receiver trying to get more money out of his team than he feels like the team thinks he's worth and actually winning that argument here. It was CeeDee Lamb. And Jerry Jones understood the assignment here. Yes, I can hold out and not pay him $2 million less than what he wants, but my football team will suffer the consequences, particularly early on. And if he does get signed later, we know what that means. Hey, 1-3 through four games. Now I get injured in game five because I sat out 5 months in my contract negotiations. Get him in the camp, get him acclimated, and start winning football games right off the bat, which includes the game against the Cleveland Browns. I looked at this one and said, if there was ever a holdout that needed to be signed immediately, it was always CeeDee Lamb.
Yes, it always was, and camp concludes today as teams around the NFL have to make their roster decisions by 4 p.m. Eastern time, so CeeDee Lamb virtually missing all of training camp. It should not hamper Dallas's offense. We'll talk about the next big move we expect the Cowboys to make at some point this preseason, now that the regular season is right around the corner. But let's focus on CeeDee Lamb. $34 million per year, $1 million annually behind Justin Jefferson, who is the highest paid non-quarterback wide receiver in the history of the NFL. J-Jet got $110 million out of the Vikings guaranteed. CeeDee Lamb gets $100 million guaranteed out of the Dallas Cowboys. A $38 million signing bonus, though, for CeeDee Lamb, the most at that position slot in the history of the NFL. And CeeDee Lamb is worth every penny, as is Justin Jefferson. And I think you could probably argue the five wide receivers now in the $30 million club. Justin Jefferson the most, CeeDee Lamb the second. A.J. Brown in Philadelphia makes about $32 million per year. Amon-Ra St. Brown makes a little bit over $30 million. And Tyreek Hill makes $30 million with the Miami Dolphins. But when you look at CeeDee Lamb's career production, 4 years in the National Football League, a first-round pick out of Oklahoma in 2020. More than 900 yards each and every year. The last three, more than 1,100. The last two, more than 1,350. And last year, 1,749 receiving yards, second most in the NFL. Led the National Football League with 135 catches and had 12 receiving touchdowns. Again, I will repeat myself. It is why, when Jerry Jones was posturing and trying to find leverage, it made no sense to me because CeeDee Lamb is worth every single penny. And outside of the quarterback, I believe Dallas is most important offensive player.
Absolutely. And also, it reminds us of what the Dallas Cowboys were actually doing this offseason, which made no sense. If you were the all-in Jerry Jones, you signed this guy in February or March. Let's just say when the free agency opens up, and technically it wasn't even a free agent, could have got done at any time. Let's just say once the league calendar flipped over to this year and he was eligible for an extension, sign him immediately. Redo Dak's contract here, and that gives you an entire free agency with more money on the table to sign more quality players to play in 2024. So for me, CeeDee Lamb getting his money this late doesn't help the Dallas Cowboys. And even if we do get a restructured contract and an extension for Dak Prescott, defeats the whole purpose. The purpose is to get that done before free agency so you know how much money you can spend and bring in even better talent to the football team that you feel has a chance to win the division and compete in the playoffs. So it was a backward season. If you told me, like, hey, the offseason, all we're going to do is sign CeeDee late and also re-up Dak late in this year, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The Cowboys will be a fine team this year. They could have been an incredible team if they made these decisions much, much earlier, Ben.
Completely agree, because CeeDee Lamb was entering the final year of his rookie deal. Dak Prescott is about to enter the final year of his contract, and Mike McCarthy, the same story, and he does not seem as though he is in line for an extension as of right now. So as we look at CeeDee Lamb's receiving yards props for 2024, we have not seen Dak Prescott throughout preseason, but here are the numbers on CeeDee Lamb. He got paid. Donnie, will Dak be paid prior to the start of 2024's regular season, the Cowboys' first game on Sunday, September 8th, just about 2 weeks away?
You'd want to say yes, but what's the point of even doing it now? Like, the whole point was to restructure his contract to get under the salary cap and pay another player. So why not just ride it out? If Dak has a great season, he's going to get paid a ton of money anyway next year at this point. See what Dak Prescott has in him. If Dak's willing to play without a new contract, that's probably a much better scenario, because if he does play and play well, and let's just say the Cowboys break through the first time since 1995 and play in a Super Bowl, yeah, he's probably worth an extra $5 million on top of his $60 million that he's going to make. And if I'm Jerry Jones, I would be fine with that. It doesn't even make any sense to sign him right now.
Yeah, but you do play a dangerous game, because Dak Prescott is a free agent and can test the market and find a different destination if he so desires. And that is the standard of success at the star. Even if the Cowboys haven't reached that level in nearly three decades, it is win a conference championship and play for a Lombardi trophy. An 8-1 price on the Cowboys to win the NFC championship. It's tied for the fourth best number around the NFC. 18-1 to win a Super Bowl. Of course, since they're Super Bowl championship in 1995, the Cowboys have failed to even reach the NFC championship game. More around the National Football League. It comes your way next. You're on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It is a very natural cause in the National Football League to look at a contract extension in one place for one individual and forecast what it might mean elsewhere around the National Football League. That's, of course, what we did yesterday. CeeDee Lamb signing a four-year, $136 million extension with the Dallas Cowboys. $34 million per year, the second highest paid non-quarterback in the history of the NFL. And as Donnie Wrightside often does, his first thought when wideout X gets paid, what about wideout Y? That's Ja'Marr Chase in Cincinnati. The difference, however, though, is Chase is entering year number four. Two more years left on his rookie deal. CeeDee Lamb and Justin Jefferson were entering the final year of their contract in 2024. But whether it's Ja'Marr Chase, DRS, or maybe Brandon Ayuk in San Francisco, who is also entering the fifth and final year of his rookie deal, what do you think Lamb's deal means for those two wide receivers?
It should mean more money. Now, let's just focus on Cincinnati. And again, I think Brandon Ayuk's deal is going to get done here. It's interesting that he never got traded, even though the deals were in place. So you knew he wanted to stay a 49er. Let's set him aside for just a moment. CeeDee Lamb got paid yesterday. Look at the rest of the wide receivers who wanted to get paid this year. They all got paid. So if you are the Philadelphia Eagles or the Miami Dolphins or the Minnesota Vikings, you said to yourself, you players, talking about the wide receivers, we love you. You're integral parts of our offense right now and into the future. We want to pay you accordingly so you're happy, so you know you're worth it, and you're going to perform at the highest level with nothing in the back of your mind that goes, oh my goodness, I just had a game that had four catches for 42 yards. That's going to impact me in free agency. Go out there and play as hard as you can and give it your best effort. The reason I bring that up is the Cincinnati Bengals told their two young wide receivers in their prime right now, they told T. Higgins, you're not part of our plans. We are not securing a long-term deal. I'll pay you this year. You'll get decent money. But next year, we're just going to cut you loose because you're not in our plans. That's how make T. Higgins feel at this point. And then if you're Jamar Chase going, the organization telling you right now, hey, we really like you here. We're just not going to pay you. Which, hear me out on this once again, Cincinnati. You wait on Jamar Chase. The price of the brick goes higher, higher, and higher every week, every month, every year, and all you do is piss off your high-end talent. What are we doing here? If Cincinnati, for me, Ben, settled T. Higgins on a long-term contract, settled Jamar Chase on a long-term contract, they signed Joe Burrow to a long-term deal. That's three players that every time you take the field, you have a legitimate chance to win now and in the future. It's a clown organization doing things backwards, and that's why I'm down on the Cincinnati Bengals in 2024. Any company you work for, take care of your assets. You will get better performance on the field. And also, yep, they can tell their friends, you want to come to Cincinnati. My owner is awesome. He takes care of you. What's the next free agent going to look like, or guy that gets drafted in the top 10? The Bengals go, man, hopefully in 5 years, I get out of here and I can get paid by somebody else.
DRS, it's a very fair assessment in my estimation as well. It might seem like, okay, the guy's still making a lot of money. He still has 2 years left on his deal. It's not really going to impact the overall outcome and production on the actual football field in NFL regular season games. But doesn't it? For Jamar Chase to feel valued as one of the best wide receivers in the National Football League, Cincinnati could have had the foresight to pay him early, like Miami did earlier this offseason with Jalen Waddle. And Jalen Waddle is not Jamar Chase. But the reason you pay a guy early is not only to get in front of the market, so the market is not dictating what you do, but you are helping influence what the market does after the contract extension that you put out there, but also because you can average out what is going to be one of the most lucrative deals we have ever seen for a wide receiver in NFL history over the final 2 years of his rookie deal, so it's more franchise-friendly for Mike Brown and the Bengals. But that, of course, did not happen. Donnie, we have speculated on if Brandon Ayuk is going to play in San Francisco this season. Preseason is done. Camp is virtually done. Is Ayuk playing for the 49ers this year?
1,000%. It's too late to make that move, to learn a new playbook, to change organizations, to get paid. They're probably just fighting over like $1 million difference right now that will come to a head probably this week, same way that CeeDee Lamb got done. You don't want this to linger into game week. I believe this deal does get done, and the 49ers will be better because of it.
And there are fines that are handed out for missing training camp practices and such, but it pales in comparison to the money from a game check. Now, when you look at names like Trent Williams in San Fran, Hassan Reddick, much maligned with the New York Jets, this is where it gets a little bit dicey and precarious. How long do you want to play hardball and miss out on millions of dollars as we approach the regular season? It is Cut Day for Enterprise's Super Bowl around the NFL next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid on this Tuesday around the National Football League. Sorry, I chuckled to myself. It's Cut Day around the NFL. Mm-hmm. It's not really a laughing matter. Many lives and livelihoods are changed on this day. All 32 NFL clubs need to cut down their roster to 53 active players, guys that have grinded it out around the National Football League in training camp, busting their tails, trying to earn a roster spot in an organization during preseason games. might not have that opportunity by day's end, 4 p.m. Eastern time. But why I chuckle is because of how Donnie Wrightside brands cut day around the NFL, Enterprises Super Bowl. I had never heard that before, so that really got me going.
Yeah, a lot of new podcasts probably going to pop up within the next 24 hours as well. People got to survive out here and eat, man. Just because you can't live out your childhood dream, you got to go to work the very next day to pay those bills. So congratulations to those guys who are letting go, starting their new careers here, and away we go.
Listen, there are, what do they say, grass is greener on the other side.
Yeah.
Most of those NFL players that try to make a training camp roster or an active roster go pro in something other than sports. That's what we might have around the NFL today. But 4 p.m. Eastern time, it is cut day in the National Football League, which is an important date in the NFL calendar, as now teams are done with training camp. Training camp is virtually concluded at this point. Preseason in the books. All sights on week number one within the next 2 weeks. It's game preparation with a couple of extra days to get ready for your week one opponent. We are 9 days out from the NFL season opener and that debut for 2024 inside Arrowhead Stadium between the Chiefs and the Ravens. So some maneuvers happening that could bolster your roster, even with guys that weren't there during camp. That is the case in Green Bay, Wisconsin. The Packers yesterday trading a seventh-round draft pick in 2025 to Tennessee in return. The Titans send third-year quarterback Malik Willis to Green Bay. He is slotted in to be the backup QB behind Jordan Love. Willis had a lot of hype entering the 2022 NFL draft out of Liberty. For a little bit of time in that draft cycle, DRS, he was the favorite to go first overall. He was the favorite to be the first quarterback taken in 2022. He slides, probably correctly so, to the third round of that draft, selected by the Titans. Did not pan out in Nashville. Now he earns a reserve role behind Jordan Love with the Pack.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong on this one. It was an interesting circumstance. I believe Malik Willis was on the Titans, and he was in line for his start, and they just didn't think he was ready for it, even though he's on the roster. And I think it was Josh Dobbs that came in off of like 5 or 6 days, and they started at quarterback for the Titans. I believe that was the correct story. So what we're getting out of Malik Willis at this point is just not ready for prime time, but we do believe he does have a lot of physical tools that down the line could amount to something. And if you are the Packers, you didn't lose anything on this, by the way. There's a seventh-round draft pick that you flip over for a backup quarterback that you feel maybe can fill in spots. And also, it's a great landing spot. There's no pressure on Malik Willis, and he's in an offense under LaFleur that's very good, and you can just sit there and learn and not have the ability to say to myself, boy, I better be prepared in 2 to 3 weeks. I'm going to start for a bad football team for 5 or 6 games, and I'm going to have to step up my game. That's not the case. If you do go down, if it's Jordan Love, that is a great spot to be in as a backup quarterback as long as you're coached up appropriately, and I believe Matt LaFleur is going to be able to do that. I think it's a win-win for both franchises. You get at least some sort of compensation back for the Titans, but also from Malik Willis, this is the perfect landing spot to learn for a couple years to feel like you might be a starting quarterback in this league and in a great organization to do so.
Yeah, absolutely so. And it's a really good point, DRS. When you look at the career stats for Malik Willis, again, it has not been the greatest start to his National Football League career in Tennessee. There you see it. 0 touchdowns thrown, 3 interceptions. Did make a few starts at the end of 2022. Had a couple of appearances last year in 2023. Is he a National Football League starter at the QB spot? Probably not. Can he grow under Matt LaFleur behind Jordan Love and provide some upside from that reserve quarterback spot? Maybe so. It was pretty clear as well throughout Packers training camp and in preseason that LaFleur and the coaching staff not in love with the two options in-house. Sean Clifford, the second-year guy out of Penn State, or the rookie Michael Pratt, who was taken day number 3. So the Packers go elsewhere to get their backup in Malik Willis. Other notable news from Monday as we enter cut day Tuesday around the National Football League. 4-time Pro Bowler Dalvin Cook, after an unsuccessful season with the New York Jets, is slated to work out for the Dallas Cowboys. Of course, it's a very new running back room at the Star. Ezekiel Elliott is back, but Tony Pollard is now in Nashville. Tim Patrick much maligned with injuries the last few years, is set to part ways with the Broncos. He will be released today if the Broncos cannot make a deal with another team around the NFL. And a Seahawks pass rusher, Uchenna Nwosu, has a sprained MCL. Not great for Mike McDonald's defense entering year number one.
No, not right out of the gate. You're trying to win that game against the Denver Broncos. But the other two are interesting. Like Patrick, it was, you take a look at the Denver Broncos over the past couple of years. The one thing it looked like they had set up, Ben, for the future was a young, talented wide receiving core that they paid, settled in, and said, we're going to grow with this. And it just went to hell in high water quickly at that point. And now you're looking at just cutting this guy loose. But also, from a Dallas Cowboy, is this what we thought when it was all in? We're going to get Ezekiel Elliott back and Dalvin Cook, two Social Security running backs here, trying to fight for playing time. You want to talk about Dalvin Cook, which was interesting last year. Do you remember when, like, the free agency, couldn't be a Miami Dolphin, am I going to be on the Jets? And the Jets paid him good money. And he just looked like a shell of his former self. And when I say that, it was unbelievable. Dalvin Cook, one of the more exciting running backs, and me being a Miami Hurricanes fan, like, you just handed him the football at Florida State, and he won you football games. And he did the same thing for most of his career in Minnesota. But when that running backs hit that wall, they just can't recover from it. And he's one of those guys where you Dalvin Cook on a screen pass or a run, he was so fun to bet on. Anytime touchdown market, receiving props, he was everything in Minnesota. And that just an absolute shell of his former self.
Yeah, it's disappointing, right? Because when he went to New York, he signed with the Jets during training camp. It wasn't the splashiest hire, but there was still a thought that with Dalvin Cook in that running back room, as Breece Hall was coming back healthy, as the Jets had some young and talented running backs, that Dalvin Cook could provide a little bit of a spark, not having to be the guy, not having to run the football 20 to 25 times per game. Just didn't work out. 15 games last year in New York, only one start, 67 carries for 214 yards, just 3.2 yards per pop. And he left Minnesota after four consecutive years as a Pro Bowler with more than 1,100 yards, playing at least 13 games in all four of those seasons. Maybe he provides a little bit of depth to Dallas this year, but now he is 29 years old. It is part of the disappointing timeline and lifespan, sadly, of a running back in the National Football League.
It's just the way it is, man. Time moves on a lot quicker for running backs than a lot of positions in the NFL. Make your money while you can, or else you're going to be spending it with a couple different franchises in a backup role, which is looks if Dalvin Cook even gets to the Dallas Cowboys, that's what's going to take place.
DRS, do we have confirmation out of Dallas if Rico Dowdle is going to be the lead back for the Cowboys this year and Zeke is kind of that reserve? Is that what the plan is?
They're probably keeping it quiet because it's embarrassing to think that Rico Dowdle is going to be your starting tailback here to start the season for the Dallas Cowboys. So probably keeping that under wraps is best.
Which made it so important then for Dallas to sign CeeDee Lamb because he is that guy offensively. Dak Prescott still unsigned, at least as of this moment. Unsigned, not the correct word. He's under contract but does not have that extension beyond this year in 2024. Could it be his final at the Star? That remains to be seen. It is Win Total Tuesday. Once again, on the early line as well. We'll go all around the NFC South a little bit later on. DRS, here's a little sneak peek for you. The last time the NFC South had three of the four teams post a winning record throughout the regular season, 2017. You don't have to do a lot to win games in this division and maybe find your way to a divisional crown, at least as of late. We'll talk Win Total Tuesday a little bit later on around Major League Baseball's Monday slate, recapping it next on TEL.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
About 12 games around the Major League Baseball slate on a Monday yesterday, but only 20 teams in action. Why do I say about 12? We had the makeup of a suspended game that started in the top of the second in Fenway between the Blue Jays and the Red Sox. Donnie's favorite story of the day, Danny Jansen, traded from Toronto to Boston at the deadline, played in the start of the game back on Wednesday, June 26th, was out there yesterday. But for the Red Sox, the first guy in MLB history to play for the to play for two teams in the same game. Donnie absolutely loves that. Make sure to tweet at him and tell him how much you loved it as well. We also had a doubleheader in Cleveland between the Guardians and the Royals. The Blue Jays won both in Fenway, by the way. Not good for Boston in terms of the AL wildcard chase. The Royals extending their lead in the AL wildcard chase. It might have something to say about the American League Central, winning both games over Cleveland in Cleveland yesterday. 4-3 in the opener. Bobby Witt Jr., a solo home run in the top of the eighth. The game-winning run. And, Donnie, they were the favorites in that game. But the dogs in game two, Cole Reagans, who got the start for KC, who has been great this year, only went four innings because he threw 94 pitches. Wasn't bad. Didn't get shelled by any means. But threw 94 pitches. I actually thought with the Guardians being a slight favorite in game two, KC probably having to rely more on the pen than they had probably anticipated with Reagans getting the start in the opening game of two yesterday, that Cleveland was the right side. I was wrong. Kansas City, six RBIs out of Salvador Perez, including a grand salami late, as the Royals take both in Cleveland with the 9-4 victory in game two as well.
Yeah, and you see how much these doubleheaders mean in every single game when you're going head-to-head competition and divisional rivalries that need wins on either side. I talked about it yesterday. You say, you know what? You're just hoping for a split for most parts here. You take a look at the Royals, who won 4-3 in game number one. They didn't say, hey, let's sit Salvi Perez. Let's sit Bobby Witt Jr. Let's not really overextend them. No, they put those guys right back in the lineup and scored 9 runs on 15 hits in game number two. When you have a team on the ropes, try to finish them. And before this, you know, series is up, you might be looking at a de facto tie overall, which is awesome to watch it play out. We knew the Guardians were a good baseball team. We just weren't trusting fully what the Kansas City Royals were bringing to the table. Now you see that yesterday doubleheader sweep by the Royals, and they're feeling themselves saying, you know what? We can win this division now, and we're showing it on the field. I love what I see out of the Royals right now. We'll see if this can continue, but I love the fact that the manager wasn't thinking about, oh, it's still a long baseball season with 30 left. Let's rest our guys. We got one, and that was the goal here. No, yeah. You get game one of that doubleheader, win game number two. You pick up two full games in one day going head-to-head against your competition. That's awesome.
The Guardians did win their weekend set against the Texas Rangers, but outside of that, have not looked very good. They've dropped 7 of their last 10. Kansas City has won 7 of its last 10. Now Cleveland holds just a 1-game lead in the American League Central. We'll look at those odds and the standings in just a moment. But again, I would like to thank Craig Mish and Kansas City. The Royals with both wins yesterday over their preseason win total of 73.5 already before we hit the month of September. 74 victories for KC. I bet it. I am happy on this Tuesday morning. Bailey Ober got the start yesterday in the Twin Cities for Minnesota against the Atlanta Braves. Had been pretty darn solid this year, a 3.54 ERA entering. Had not allowed more than 3 earned runs since early June. He got shelled yesterday by the Braves early and often. 9 earned, given up over 2 innings of work. Matt Olson, a big day. He had 5 RBIs, including a 3-run blast in the very top of the first inning for Atlanta. The Braves have 13 hits. They score 10 runs, a total of 7.5 skies over as the Braves win outright as the dog in Minneapolis, 10-6 over the Twins.
I'll tell you what's funny about this, too. You look at that lineup for the Braves, and the Phillies had Whit Merrifield, who signed as a free agent for them to come off the bench and be that super utility guy. And I was happy with that. One of the guys used to be a league leader with base hits. We know he's not that same player that he was in a Kansas City uniform, but you still figured he would be a very good scenario for giving, like, you know, a couple guys off. He can play multiple positions here. But it looked like for the Phillies, Ben, he was absolutely playing in slow motion. Swing was slow. Play was slow. Fielding was off. And they just released him and said, you know what, we're not even going to give you a second chance because it looks like you hit the wall. And then you find out games like this where Whit Merrifield goes 5 of 5 in the leadoff spot. There's just something about the Atlanta Braves. You plug just randos into that lineup and they're absolutely really good ball players out of nowhere. Because I remember when Whit Merrifield went to Atlanta, I'm like, dude, they're going to laugh at this guy. Like, he is absolutely shot. And to see him go 5 for 5 in a game where the Braves opened up a 9-1 lead after 2 innings against a very good pitcher this year in Major League Baseball on the road. The Braves scored 10 runs yesterday. That's something to keep an eye on here, but I look at the performance out of Whit Merrifield and just scratch my head saying, this is unbelievable. Never would have saw that coming.
5 for 5 at the dish, scoring two runs. You need those guys to fill in now that Atlanta has been decimated by injuries. Michael Harris Jr. leaving over the weekend, or Michael Harris II leaving over the weekend. He was the guy slotted into the leadoff spot after he returned earlier in August after being on the sideline for a few months. So the Braves have now won 7 of their last 9 games. Minnesota has dropped 6 of its last 8. Atlanta opens up a 3-game lead in the National League wild card. The Mets had the day off yesterday, but trail by 3 games behind the Braves. The Guardians still a game lead in the American League Central, but the shortest price on Cleveland we have seen in some time in the divisional odds. Minus 120 on the Guardians. The Royals, the second best number at plus 230. They're only a game behind Minnesota, 2.5 games behind at plus 270. Generous for FanDuel to hang the Tigers' price at 50-1. You will not see the White Sox number as they have been eliminated from postseason contention already. 101 losses for Chicago. The Tigers picking up a victory yesterday to get a 4-game sweep in the extended weekend set.
Yeah, that's a bad baseball team out there, and who knows? Like, the struggle to win games in September, they're just trying to find, like, guys to actually put in uniform here. But just getting back quickly here to the Cleveland Guardians, this was one of those teams where even though they're battling for the best record in baseball and were for the majority of the summer, I repeatedly said, that's the team I trust the least here getting into the playoffs and wouldn't buy into. Now, there's still time to turn it around, but they are leaking oil quickly here, and somebody's got to step up for that baseball team outside of, I don't know, Jose Ramirez.
Donnie, they've been a very streaky team throughout this second half. They have now lost 5 of their last 7. More in MLB next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Elsewhere around Major League Baseball on a Monday, much to Donnie's delight, Philadelphia's bats wake up late to tie a game against Houston, send it to extras in a low-scoring affair, and Bryce Harper delivers in the 10th to walk it off at the bank for the Phils, a 3-2 victory over Houston in the opener of this marquee midweek set. The Phils were a hefty favorite, near $2 at home. Zach Wheeler got the start for Philadelphia. Ronel Blanco on the other side for the Stros. Wheeler solid once again. He has made 5 starts here in the month of August. 7 earned runs given up in total. No more than 2. He gave up 2 earned runs yesterday in 6 innings of work. And the bats have done what Philly has needed, DRS. The RBI single from Bryce Harper walks it off in the 10th for Philadelphia.
Yeah, you got to give credit to Bryce Harper because that's lefty-lefty is always going to be tough, specifically with guys brought in just to get you out. And Josh Hader, one of the best lefty, you know, closers or hammers over the past, 5 to 6 years in baseball, able to get a base hit in a big moment. That's nice here. But the Phillies still struck out 12 times as a team. And you take a look at that score, 3 runs on the board. Yes, they got 9 hits. You'll take that. Any win is good, particularly against a solid Astros team. I like that. But, you know, back with Casey at the bat, that old rhyme or whatever the story was back in the day, no joy in Mudville. I find myself looking at this Phillies team at 77-54 and getting zero enjoyment out of this entire process. You're supposed to be loving a first place team up 6 games in the NL East heading towards another Red October here in Philadelphia. But it's been quite unenjoyable, and a lot of times find myself checking out early in baseball games with just frustration, and it shouldn't be the case. That should be a joyous effort. There was close to 40,000 people in the ballpark last night. I'm sure they enjoyed that 10th inning overall and that base hit by Bryce Harper, and rightfully so. But my goodness, something just has to wake up with this baseball team where everything clicks at the right time, and hopefully it does in September, because the Phillies do have an MO of playing much better baseball in September than typically throughout the summer months. They were great during the summer months, right up to the All-Star break, and then sort of that whole malaise that they're in right now. But I just want the joy back in Philadelphia here. Come on now, boys. Keep the win. Maybe we'll get it back.
Red October has been a thing. Wheeler plus 280 now to win National League Cy Young Award hardware. Chris Sale still the hefty favorite at minus 430. But the Phils have won 8 of their last 12. The Astros, who were red hot to start off August, have dropped 5 of their last 7. Still 14-9, though, in this month. And the lead in the American League West It's gotten a little bit tighter over the last few days. Now just 3.5 games as Seattle wins at home last night over the Rays. The M's were a -130 favorite. They had lost 8 of their last 9 entering the weekend, but did win it against San Francisco and continue that to start off this midweek set. Randy Arozarena, a 3-run home run, really the difference against his former team, Tampa, trading Arozarena to Seattle ahead of the trade deadline as the Mariners win 5-1.
Yeah, finally a couple shots there, Polanco and Arozarena there. The one thing we said yesterday on a quick handicap of this game is just take the under, man. Two of the most frustrating baseball teams on the planet at the plate playing in a pitcher's ballpark. Where do I sign up? And quite frankly, this game looked like it was headed for an easy over as they had these 6 runs before you entered into the 5th inning. But as you know, if you're sitting on that over, nobody scored the rest of the way. That's a tough scene overall. Mariners get the victory, try to stay close with the Houston Astros, and Tampa Bay just floundering around. Roughly at 500 now in the season.
10-14 since the trade deadline for the Rays, a compelling trade deadline where Tampa was kind of in the American League wild card chase, traded most of their best players elsewhere around MLB, and that's been the result. The M's 10-12 now in the month of August. San Diego 16-7 in August, and Jackson Merrill continues to bolster his National League Rookie of the Year award case. 3 ribbies yesterday. Manny Machado, 3 RBIs as well, and San Diego wins the opener under the arch as a slight underdog in St. Louis over the Cardinals 7-4.
Yeah, Vasquez not a great pitcher, too, because 6 innings, 2 earned runs here. And that lineup yesterday for the Cardinals didn't project all that well going up against Vasquez, and they couldn't really take advantage of it. But the one thing I told you yesterday, the offense for this game would be provided by the San Diego Padres, and it was, as they scored 7 times in this game. Gibson, 4 1/3 innings pitched, 7 earned runs. That's the Kyle Gibson that we know and love, giving up taters left and right. So 11 total runs in that game, goes over. Padres pick up another victory, 75-58 now on the season for that talented team.
-195 for Merrill, by the way, to win National League Rookie of the Year. The Atlanta Braves have a 3-game lead entering Tuesday over the New York Mets. The price for the playoffs now listed once again on FanDuel. It's -580. San Diego and Arizona off the board. They have a substantial advantage over Atlanta, who has a substantial advantage as of this moment over the Mets. Hour 2 on the other side of the break here on the Early Line.